fake Bandit, Bandit, Bandit. You know how people are.
Complete and utter lack of being able to shuffle his deck properly.
Dystopian reality.
Very much like Sol Ring, where it's just an auto-include into every deck that could possibly have it.
I do like this kind of Wild Wild West part of Standard.
I just threw up in my mouth a little bit.
Ugh, this card again? That card's not worth anything.
All right, Brian, we need an audio pinky swear right now between me and you.
That's all there is on the agenda, just play Magic, play Magic, play Magic.
Oh, you brave soul. You survived the episode 100 celebration. Welcome back on the next leg of the marathon. I'm Sean Seacrease, he's Matt Hurley, and he's Brian Tibbetts. This week we go across the pond and honor one of the old men of Magic, a community builder, a visionary, and somebody who decided to finally prey on one of the more unstable mana bases in Legacy history. But we started each week on Tryhards with What Are You Drinking? Brian, you still trying to quell the Mexican monster that got too much of you at dinner tonight?
A little bit, but I'm not following it up with the worm, thankfully. No, I've got a little bit of scotch and soda, which I don't have very often, but it kind of is that combination of brown alcohol with just a little touch of fizz that hits all the right notes this evening. So my stomach is feeling much, much better after devouring my plate of food and polishing off the rest of both of my daughters.
Oh, that's a sure way to need one of those. I was busy today, didn't get to get anything special. Actually, on the way up here, I just reached in the fridge and stole one of the girlfriend's summer shandies. So something light here this evening in Command Central. Matt, what do you got in the glass?
An Elijah Craig single barrel that we got a little sampler of. So 18-year barrel proof. It is almost too sweet for me. I know that's a little crazy. It's a really, really good bourbon. Yeah, it's almost too sweet. I usually hit that 16-year mark and it becomes too caramely for me, but it is pretty good. We got, like I said, we got a little sample of it, and so I've got one glass of it I can drink tonight.
All right, Brian, we need an audio pinky swear right now between me and you. We've got to do better next week. I can't believe Hurley is carrying us.
Yeah, I mean, I've got Bullet in the glass, but it's still, yeah, I feel like I am totally woefully underprepared for this compared to what he just read.
They have some amazing stuff now over at the Girlfriend's Liquor Store. They actually started to sell samplers of some of their most expensive bourbons and whiskeys and a couple of scotches, but it's mostly bourbons and whiskeys. I'm like, oh, I'll spend $5 on, you know, a little sampler, or $6 on a little sampler versus spending $80 on something I might not actually like. So that's where this Elijah Craig came from, but it's really, really good.
That sounds like I'm hoping somebody here does that. That sounds like it's a great way to go. Hopefully your goblet is filled up with something just as regal and royal as Matt has this evening here for Tryhards. Guys, what Magic did you play? Matt, we're going to be talking about what you're going to play later in the show, but did you get to play anything this week?
Thursday night, just played a quick draft. It's been a few weeks of lots of work, like 55, 60, 65 hours of work every week. When I went to draft, I actually went to play Star Wars because I didn't know they were drafting. I thought they were playing Modern. So I actually got down there. Nobody wanted to play Star Wars. And so I drafted and I had an abomination of a deck. Did go 2-1 with it and did not take any prizes with it. So not really worth talking about. Well, red, white, just whatever deck, and I wasn't super happy with it.
Oh, we've got a lot in common, Matthew. I also
this sounds like exactly what Sean texted us about, huh?
Yeah, I also bought a ticket to the Karn Lottery, and the best thing I pulled out of there, I think, was a Damping Sphere. So that'll tell you where my also red-white deck ended up. When you're Boros, there are a lot of wins if you can get an aggressive deck together low on the curve and back it up with some removal or burn to the face. Boros also can find a lot of wins if the format is one that allows you to go big and dominate the battlefield with splashy effects. Red and white are great for that. There's not a lot of wins in mid-range draft Boros, like starting your curve going 3-drop, 3-drop, 2-2-drops, and a 4-drop. Like, there's no wins there, so don't try and do that. That's my experiment for you, and I'm just passing that on to you. Brian, did you get to play any Magic this week?
Other than playing some Legacy with you on Skype, no, I did not get to play any Magic. But that was kind of a fun little session. Hurley, Sean said, hey, let's do some Legacy this week. So I said, sure, whatever. And I didn't want to just roll out what I'd been running. So Sean was very patient with me as I cobbled together a deck on stream, and then we just kind of played over Skype, and I had the new version of Legacy Miracles together. It ran pretty okay. It's not the most fun deck play in the world. It's just kind of like the fun police all over again, just not nearly as policey as it once was. But yeah, we got some games in, so at least I got to touch the cardboard and things. I just kept in touch with some of the gents from the area who went up to a PPTQ. Rob made top 8 of that. Rob seems to have this complete and utter lack of being able to shuffle his deck properly when he gets to top 8 and just has to mull himself into oblivion and ends up losing in like the semifinals or the quarterfinals. So that happened once again. So he had a really good black-green deck that I was excited to see what would do with it. So
Brian, Miracles is still the police in Legacy, still the fun police. It's just not the fun Gestapo anymore. All right,
there's correct.
That's the difference you were looking for there. Still going to be the fun police more often than not. We hope whatever you got to play went your way all weekend long. And maybe our raffle will go your way. It's time for our May Patreon raffle, the first of two. Matt, do you have the eligibles list cranked up? It is going to be from me this week with Karn ubiquitous in Standard right now. We're trying to figure out who can brew up something new, powerful, exciting, that takes the metagame in an unexpected way and gets a new angle out of Karn. Well, there is another 4-drop Planeswalker in Standard that loves artifacts. That's Tezzeret the Schemer. Maybe the two will be best friends. Maybe the two will end up hating each other. I don't know, but I'm going to send out a Tezzeret the Schemer, and hopefully you'll brew and figure out if this is going to be the next broken deck in Standard. All right, Matt, here we go. Tezzeret the Schemer, how many eligibles?
52.
We'll set the Tryhard's random number generator, and beep, boop, beep, 31.
Joey Ruckel, I believe, is his last name.
Joey, congratulations. We're going to get in touch with you, and you'll soon have a Tezzeret the Schemer in your dirty paws and see what you can do with it. We'll have another Patreon raffle coming up later this month here on Tryhards. That brings us up to the tournament news from this week. The Lone GP level event was held in Birmingham, England over the weekend, and it was a double GP weekend. Guys, these are fast becoming my favorite. Not only do you get 3 days of pretty high-level Magic, but you tend to get Legacy on both Friday and Saturday, and Wizards hasn't shied away from showcasing Legacy over 2 of the 3 days of this GP structure, and it's really been fun to watch. Matt, you were paying attention to the Legacy this weekend as well. This was a fun weekend, and a weekend that might see some tech leak out after what happened.
Old man Gary, as they like to call him, ended up taking it down. Gary Campbell, one of the few that has, I believe it's a 4-digit DCI number, and played in the first Pro Tour. I think he's 53 years old is what Riley said. He won, finally. He's known as the Godfather of Magic. He won preying upon everything with his Red Prison deck. Blood Moons, you know, just how you think of a Red Prison deck. It was amazing to watch the finals. Gary played a hell of a game. He's Scotland's champion right now. So go back and rewatch it if you didn't watch it, because it was almost bringing a tear to your eyes. In top 16, a lot of check pile, Grixis Delver, a lot of greedy mana bases hiding out there. We had a couple of outliers here. We did have a Steel Stompy deck, you know, that was in the finals. It had Karn, Scion of Urza in the sideboard. That just seems really good in that deck, and I think that's going to start going into the main deck. In 13th place, I think this is the most important, Food Chain. Now, this is Trinket Mage Food Chain. I've long said this is not a fun one. I'm just not a huge fan of it. You know, everything for the GP is amazing. Riley Knight made the GP. He just did an amazing job. Great to watch him Legacy.
Matt, you picked out the two decks that were on my mind as well, and that was Steel Stompy in second, and then Food Chain, just because I wanted to get your reaction to it. Hanging out in 13th place. Also, Zan Saeed breaking BOMAC Courier into the format over the weekend. That was spicy, and I'm interested to see if some people start to experiment with it now that Zan broke the seal, so to speak. That Steel Stompy deck, guys, this to me seems like kind of Legacy's version of Shops that you see in Vintage. Does this have legs? Was it missing just Karn? Because we know the artifact selection is there. You can pressure with it. You get creatures that do multiple things, whether it's Revoker, whether it's Lodestone Golem, whether it's Walking Ballista. You have all of these different sort of creatures to choose from that are also hateful in that deck. Steel Stompy, here to stay or flash in the pan? I think there's something here.
Oh, there's definitely something here. Looking at the creatures, it looks very much like a great meld between shops and like an affinity build with the steel overseers, with the vault scourges and the mox opals. There's a couple creature numbers that I was scratching my head about. One Phyrexian Metamorph, two Etch Champion. I was thinking maybe three Etch Champions seemed good. The four Walking Ballistas are obviously amazing with four Ancient Tomb, four City of Traders. This deck definitely has legs. You're going to be able to just outpace your opponent in a lot of different scenarios, especially if you get down Thorn of Amethyst with Chalice of the Void probably on one or two. That seems to be really, really great. I really, really like this deck. The colorless decks, I think, have been a welcome breath of air from all of the multi-Grixis deck, four-color Leovold decks coming down. It's kind of like getting back to the simplicity of things. I'm not going to go as far as to say that I'm ever going to play Mono Red Prison, because I won't. I kind of love the linear builds of some of these colorless decks and mono-color decks just because of how fast they can get to the board and how well they can just kind of run over your opponent before they can get things built up.
Well, Brian, you've played Eldrazi, the aggro Eldrazi versions. Is this Steel Stompy stomping on their turf right now? Or are these two different decks that want to play out differently? Are we going to just see one sort of aggressive Stompy colorless deck eventually win out?
You know, that's a great question, because I don't think there's enough data, at least from what I've seen out there, to know one over the other. The Steel Overseers are so strong in this deck. I feel like that's a card that if it's down early, Eldrazi doesn't have a whole lot of removal. We just can't get rid of that dismember here or there. That's about it. This is a deck that, with its controlling elements of the Phyrexian Revokers, with the Walking Ballistas, with the Thorns, with the Chalice main, I feel like this is the stronger of the decks. If I was going to play a colorless deck going forward at the next tournament, I think I would try to run something closer to this as opposed to just the colorless Eldrazi Stompy list. It just looks to me like it's a little bit more fun and has a little bit more going on than just the colorless Eldrazi, which is basically just one note and you're just kind of, you know, pounding your fist on the table after every turn.
What do you feel about Mistress Factories versus having some number of Ink Moths in there as well? Because your Arcbound Ravager and your Steel Overseers, I mean, is it worth having that Ink Moth in there just as an added win con?
I feel like that's what the Jit's in there for. If you can equip something with Jit, I feel like, you know, you're so far ahead. And I know that that's what the colorless Eldrazi deck is running as well. But the stuff that the taxing effects that this deck has, I think goes above and beyond. So you could probably sub out the Nexus for the Mistress Factory. I don't think that's a big thing one over the other. I think the pump effect on the Mistress Factory is probably a big deal. So, you know, you could potentially do three as opposed to two damage, you know, with the pump effect. So that might be relevant in the late game. I'd like to see somebody's ideas on builds before I made that decision. But this looks like a lot of fun. I got to see it once on camera and I was kind of like, what is happening here right now? And when it kind of
somebody bring a modern
out,
deck.
Yeah, it's like, that's what it looked like, right? It didn't it look like a modern affinity deck from the first couple plays? Then you're like, oh wait, it's modern affinity with a whole lot of legacy mana base, which is just over the top. I'm really happy to see it did as well as it did.
It's interesting to me, Matt, you said about the Mistress Factories, a free roll. You've got room for your eight soul lands, obviously, but in a deck where you only want generic mana, the Mistress Factory becomes a free roll. What I was interested in is, does this deck have any room to go combo style and add in some incidental black mana for a Deceitful of the Vault?
I don't know. I think that may be stretching it a bit just because you don't have any fetches. It's only running three Mox Opals. I think that's probably the right amount. I think this is honestly built fairly close to what you want. You can obviously sub in some of the Metamorphs, the Golems, the Revokers, like change those numbers up depending on what it goes. But I don't think you ever really want to go Disciple of the Vault. I think it just stretches it too far.
The card that I was most interested this weekend was from a Grixis deck, but it wasn't a Grixis Delver deck. Grixis Kess deck by Janus Anderson. Have you ever played against Kess Dissident Mage, gentlemen? And if so, what's your experience with it? Do you think that this might be a new iteration, or is this just getting away from what Grixis does best, Sean?
Just once, and I was playing Reanimator, so it was a non-issue. I mean, they played it. It stuck around for a turn, and then the game was over. So I like the little bit of range that it gives. I'm also glad that Matt explained the Kess Dissident Mage substitution rule that Wizards had just explained a couple of weeks ago because of the foil warping. And I was laughing about that when I started to see this card on camera. But I just don't have enough experience playing against it to know whether it brings that much depth to the archetype that it's worth it, or if it's just a free splash of one card mat because it's worth it on just that little bit of angle that it gives. So I just don't have enough experience.
I've played against it multiple times, and I'll tell you, it's a beating. It is a free splash of one card. I guess in that spot, there's a lot of other stuff you could play. These Grixis Delver decks, they're not winning through huge combo turns anymore. You know, they used to win through, I'll attack you with nine, you know, just 1/1s or whatever. But now they're kind of controlling the game a lot better, and that Kess just does a ton of work. No, it's a very, very good card, and running two Kess in there, I think maybe a little bit, you know, like, eh. But being able to Kess back a Kolaghan's Command or, you know, a Fatal Push or an Edict or just about anything, and Bolts, all that stuff, it's a beating, and you want to counter it if you have a chance.
The Snapcaster Mage, but also the one Search for Azcanta that Giannis Anderson had in the main deck, which I think was really, really spicy. So I was happy to see something that wasn't just a stock Grixis Delver deck make it into the top eight.
We were talking about Mono Red Prison winning in the hands of Gary Campbell and Steel Stompy making a big showing. Quick poll. Which do you think has more decks in day two, as Team Trios will be this weekend at GP Toronto? Matt, which deck places more copies in day two, Steel Stompy or Mono Red Prison?
Before I answer this, the Team Trios are Legacy, Modern, Standard, correct?
Correct. So it's not going to be a perfect match because somebody might get carried there, or one deck might perform well, but another format kind of held them back. So this won't be perfect data, but just go ahead and give me your guess.
I'm guessing Steel Stompy.
Mono Red, because it's a known quantity and people are realizing its power level.
I'm actually going to go Steel Stompy here. One, it feels new. And two, I think the list is easier to put together in the 6 days that you have for the turnaround. So I think that may play a role in it too, is how many people can get the list together and play it before the GP in Toronto this weekend. We'll throw the question up on the Patreon page as well for that quick poll heading into GP Toronto this weekend. Team Trios in America's Hat. Brian, still across the pond, Standard took the stage Saturday and Sunday, and it ended up being really very interesting to me. What stood out to you as you take us through this?
1,169 players stayed in Birmingham for the Standard portion of the Grand Prix. And guys, we thought that's all it was going to be, was a Grand Prix Standard. However, it was more like a coming out party for black-red vehicles this weekend. A full 50% of the top 32 deck lists, that's right, 16 of the top 32 deck lists were the black-red vehicles list, almost identical builds and identical sideboards, so a complete 75 up and down. Simon Nielsen on black-red vehicles took down Leo Lahonen on blue-white control in the finals. There were six black-red vehicle decks in the top eight to go along with that one blue-white control, one black-white vehicles, and then one black-green constrictor deck. He was on 40 points. This is Etienne Bousson, who's a pro. He was on 40 points, top seed going into the top eight, and just got rolled 2-0 by the eventual champion, Simon Nielsen. Guys, I didn't see this coming, and obviously I haven't been testing on Dream or Skype or anything like this, but did this surprise you at just how dominant this archetype was this weekend, Hurley?
Not one bit. I actually kind of fully expected this. The reason is because I have been watching a lot of the results on Moto. I haven't been playing myself. I've been watching a lot of the results only because I've been very interested in kind of building a deck just maybe for this week, and I need to pick up a few more Planeswalker points. Yeah, I'm not surprised. I'm surprised by some of, you know, like there's a decent amount of variation within here, but this Goblin Chain Whirler is amazing. A lot of people were complaining about Chandra Torch of Defiance because you can no longer hit Planeswalkers with it. So Planeswalkers are becoming very ubiquitous within the format. And then, of course, people are saying, oh my gosh, Karn's a mistake. Ban it, ban it, ban it. You know how people are. This is a response to the blue-eye control decks. This is a response to the green decks as well. The decks kind of go wider, and they have more resilient threats, so they can beat out the mono-green decks as well. So Everyone needs to calm down. This is just standard being standard.
Sean, what about you? Do you think that this is the new deck with the target on its back, so to speak? And are we going to enter another season of just standard being a very one-note?
No, I don't think we're looking at a one-note format. Just a week ago, people would have told you if it was going to be one-note, it was going to be blue-white control. Well, we just had half of the top 32 be black-red vehicles. I think that Matt got it mostly right. From what I've seen, this black-red vehicles was looking to beat out two decks. The blue-white decks and the white-black decks that were preying on the blue-white decks. I think the black-red deck has a very good matchup against both because of things like Goblin Chain Whirler. I think where they're going to have problems is the mono-green decks, because the green decks can ramp hard enough, and the black-red deck really, as it was played at the GP, doesn't play that much removal. So they're going to let the mono-green decks get to Galta fairly regularly, I think. So it'll be interesting to see whether it's mono-green that starts preying on the black-red vehicles, or if black-red sort of reorients itself to account for a little bit more removal so that mono-green can't get that sort of downhill boulder roll going. But how are you going to build blue-white now is my question. Are we looking at a format where control, after being hyped the first 10 days, is suddenly pushed just into the corner fringes because you've got white-black that it struggles with? Now it's struggling with black-red. It's going to struggle with mono-green. Where is control right now? I think that's the question. And after a lot of people poo-pooed Raf Kapushin at the beginning while we were high on it on this show, I think that may be the answer, because it allows you to play an all-instant speed game and get away from playing that turn four Karn and being mid-range. So we'll see whether or not the white-blue deck is rescued by an uncommon, or if it has to adapt in a totally different way in order to handle all these threats.
Let me ask you two then, do you think Karn is a $75 card? I mean, is it that good?
I don't think anything in standard is a $75 card.
Good answer, Sean.
I think people right away have a knee-jerk reaction because they haven't done the work to figure out how to attack the new threat. And Karn isn't control. Karn's a threat. It's a threat of an ongoing cavalcade of automatons. It's a threat of card advantage, but in and of itself, it doesn't provide very much. It relies on the other pieces of the puzzle that it pulls together for you. So how do you attack a card like that? I think that's what we have to figure out. There are some cards that it's not obvious. We still have yet to see Lich's Mastery make an impact on a big level, because it takes a while to work with a card like that. How are you going to beat Karn? It's easy to put Karn in every deck, and I think eventually he's going to find a home in the more aggro decks. I said that before here on the cast. I think he actually is going to help power the aggro decks up against the control decks that use him faster than he powers up the control decks that he's in order to answer those aggro or early mid-range decks. I don't think he's a $75 card, and I don't think that he needs to be banned. People just are going to take a couple weeks to figure out what to do with him. We'll watch. The Pro Tour is coming up in a few weeks. We're not too far away from the next Pro Tour Pick'em show. I think we'll be talking about a very different format after that Pro Tour.
Nothing is worth $75 in standard to me. Not Jace Vin's Prodigy when it was creeping up to 100. Not Chandra Torch of Defiance when she was climbing up, up, up. It's going to go down, and people are going to kind of all take a deep breath, and the format's going to settle in. I do like this kind of wild, wild west part of standard at this point right now. My question a little bit earlier was baited. I obviously don't think that we're going to be in this one note format for very long. I think people are constantly brewing. There's so much information out there. We were talking about the mono green deck. I was really, really happy to see Raul Vallejo's Steel Leaf Stompy come in 12th. Did you see this list, guys? I mean, we're talking Galta Primal Hunger, the Greenbelt Rampager, Merfolk Branch Walker, the Steel Leaf Champion, of course, Thrashing Brontodon, Four Heart of Kirin. I feel like this is a deck that people are not going to be expecting. And, you know, green is a very easy color to kind of play, just because you're just putting lands on the battlefield and dumping 29 creatures out. And that's going to win you some games in Magic, even against blue-white control, even against black-red vehicles, because they're not going to have optimal draws all the time. So the big question to me on this blue-white control is Leo Lahonen. Watching him play, it was kind of maddening, because I love this list so much. I love the blue-white control archetype, but he had zero Torrential Gearhulks. His entire win condition was basically Teferi. I just didn't know what to make of that. I don't know if that's right. Obviously, he took second at a GP, and I don't have nearly that record to speak of, But I feel like all the other decks that went 9 through 32 of the blue-white, of which there were another three, are running Gearhulk in the build. Some three, some four. So, guys, in your opinion, do you think Gearhulk is still a relevant card in the blue-white build, or B, do we just go Planeswalker control, try to get to the Teferi ultimate, and then just, you know, run your opponent out of permanent, Sean?
I think that if you go back to what we've been talking about and take the blue-white deck all the way over to instant speed only, a la Raf Capuchin, then you get back to Gearhulk, because you can play everything at instant speed when you build your deck around that feature. I think the way it sits right now, that Gearhulk is not something that you want, because you can only have so many fives and sixes in that list, and you have to have Settle, you have to have Fumigate, and you have to have Teferi and Karn, and you have to have room for Lyra out of the sideboard. How many fives and sixes can you put in there? I think that Torrential Gearhulk right now is falling under the axe, so to speak, of not enough room, and the deck is just plain choosing different threats in order to get to the end game. I didn't have time to go through the data, but I'm starting to wonder how many rounds Lahonan won 1-0. Because the way he played this and the way the deck is set up, it takes the first game before your opponent can sideboard and drags it out for 40, 43, 45 minutes. I'm curious as to how many rounds he won 1-0.
Good.
And whether that was intentional going into the weekend for him.
I wonder that as well when I was kind of watching this. I also wonder how good is Gearhulk right now. I'm not a big fan of it right now. Honestly, it's because all this removal. I mean, people are playing, you know, main deck a Braid, and I think you have better things you could be doing at six. By the time you're casting Gearhulk on six, they've already got a couple of Karn tokens out, or they've got, you know, a good amount of threats out. So I don't think it's that amazing. I will say on the some of the green decks, I do really love the way they're building it, and I love the Threshing Brontodons as well. My local LGS had a PPTQ over the weekend, and I think they had 30-some people there. They sold something like 20 Threshing Brontodons like right before the tournament, and they were totally out of them. In fact, a couple of the guys messaged me. They're like, hey, do you have a pile? I'm like, that is not a card I have a pile of. I have a bunch, but it would take me a while to find them. Those are the kind of the cool cards that are coming around. And, you know, 3/4 for 3 is nothing to really sneeze at. I really don't think Torrential Gearhulk, and I'm not sure what these decks are going to look like, but I do think that Raf is going to be our go-to. And the one card that just kills me that hasn't popped up yet is Driven to Despair. I think it's because it gives your creatures trample. I would, in these mono green decks, I'd be splashing black to have Driven to Despair. It blows my mind it hasn't popped up yet. Being able to give yourself Menace and the discard and draw card in trample just seems awesome for 4 mana. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think there's probably a green-black deck out there somewhere that's just amazing, but I don't think people have found it yet.
Yeah, Matt, I think you're onto something. The control deck should be very scared with mono green. Mono green has 3 easy tools available to it in Shaper's Sanctuary, Blossoming Defense, and Heroic Intervention that will just give a control deck absolute fits. Shaper's Sanctuary, okay, you're going to seal away my guy, I'll draw another card. Thank you, I'll draw another card. Blossoming Defense, now all of a sudden no seal aways might not even be good after you target them. And Heroic Intervention just completely blanks your removal and or your Fumigate for 2 mana. So suddenly green has a counterspell that counters anything they care about you doing to their permanents on the field already. And with the mana reduction cost you get on Gehalta, the turn that you play Gehalta being able to hold up Heroic Intervention, I just threw up in my mouth a little bit.
I honestly am a little surprised too. We haven't seen like a mono green with a splash of white as well, because Shalai Voice of Plenty is just so powerful right now with Settle the Wreckage being the you know, the go-to, and then all the spot removal that's running around. I mean, all these unlicensed disintegrations, I'm like, yes, please. I will please take, you know, a Shalai single white, and then you can pump everything for 6 green. Okay, that seems really good to me.
There was one more deck that stood out in this in my mind, Brian, and that was the Grixis Chainwhirler deck in 22nd. The audacity with a 3-color mana base to include a full four copies of a triple red creature, Goblin Chainwhirler, alongside 3 the Scarab Gods, 2 Glory Bringers, 4 Glint Sleeve Siphoners, Whirler Virtuoso. I like what this deck is trying to do. And it's got the new bay of the format, it seems, if I use that slang correctly. Sorcerer's Spyglass is starting to creep into more and more lists out of the sideboard. This is one of the answers that the format has to Karn. Ready to go? You can play it in any combination of colors or any monocolored deck. But this Sasha Schwartz, thumbs up for me, and I toasted to you this weekend when I saw the Grixis Chain Whirler list in 22nd.
Yeah, this thing.
I think that's awesome. Yeah.
It's
yeah.
So good. And Whirler Virtuoso is still a really good Magic card. It just slots in absolutely perfectly in this three slot next to Chain Whirler in this deck, because what it does, clogging up the skies and clogging up the ground, enabling energy in this with Glintsleeve Siphoner, the Glimmer of Genius, the Harness Lightnings, all of these go together to make a really, really potent deck. I think the mana base, I mean, 27 lands in this, which is kind of a mid-range deck, but it almost wants to play like an aggro deck. You have to have 27 to make sure you have all the colors that you need. But I guess, you know, we're maybe looking at the standard of 2.5, 3 years ago, guys, where you were able to fetch up almost any color that you wanted to. Now they just kind of come into play tap, or you cycle for what you need.
I would not be playing Glintsleeve Siphoner. I think it's unplayable, and I think Whirler Virtuoso is also unplayable because of all the Chain Whirlers.
A resolved Glintsleeve that can get in for 2 hits to get you a couple extra cards has done its job. It's kind of like how many, you know, how valuable is Bob in Modern or Legacy? How many times can you draw off Bob before, you know, you don't care if Bob dies? It's the same thing with Glintsleeve, I think. I don't think that there's enough Chain Whirlers to go around so far to think that that's going to be like a card that's just damping down that kind of strategy. But it plays really, really well. And I'm really looking forward to see if somebody picks up these Grixis Chain Whirler decks, this kind of colored mana base, and, you know, moves forward with it.
You know how greedy I am, and this mana base is making me cringe. So we'll see if this gets figured out or if this is just not going to be possible on a repeatable basis because of the color demands in that Grixis Chain Whirler deck. Interesting to see another take on the format. I think Standard's going to be in a pretty good place. Guys, there's another format that it turns out might end up in a good place, despite the fact that Matt eulogized it here on Tryhards. The only key you needed was to go Brawl-less. And then now you can have something that everybody wants to see. Brawl has gone Brawl-less and stepped away from using the standard ban list. Matt, you've been on top of the Brawl format. This had to happen in my mind, didn't it? It's a different format. It requires a different ban list and has to be handled in a different way than Constructed Standard does.
Yeah, they heard our eulogy and they said, oh yeah, we'll just we'll put this ban list out. It was all because of us. Yeah, I mean, they had to do that. They had to take out Sorcerer's Spyglass as well, just because that was one of those cards. It's very much like Sol Ring, where it's just an auto-include into every deck that can possibly have it. I've got a deck built. I'm going to probably try and play some side events this weekend and see what's happening. So, you know, it may just be a real cheap, real easy way for me to play that a little bit.
What about you, Professor Brian? While your kids are sitting for exams, are you going to be building a Brawl deck after the announcement?
Probably not top on my list is building a Brawl deck. I'm still trying to figure out what standard deck I want to focus on, whether it's going to be some iteration of blue-white. I love the Brawl format, and I think if people are really interested in playing it, I'll probably do that as part of the community include, so I can say, yeah, sure. I also have a Tiny Leaders deck that hasn't seen light of day in quite some time because I thought that was going to be the format of choice moving forward.
We'll see how this goes forward and if it continues to capture people's imagination now that the Fun Police, we keep coming back to that on this episode, has been banned from Brawl. Get out of here, Brawl. You'd be taking a ride down in the elevator if you were so graced with a ride in Matt's finance elevator this week. What is in there with you, Matt? And are we going up or are we going down?
Hindershoot Dryad. Ixalan and Rivals of Ixalan, their prices are going way up. They're very undervalued, all the cards. But Tindershoot Dryad is an $8 card. It's a fun card, don't get me wrong, but Star City sold out. And you can buy these out for $5 a piece, but sell these. If you did any amount of Ixalan drafting, you probably have 2, 3, 4 of these sitting around. So you probably got a good $20, $25 in store credit locally, because these will be back down to $2 or $3.
Tindershoot Dryad, this week's In the Elevator, here on Tryhards. That brings us up to this week's 3 Minutes to Brew. Brian, I don't know if you're allowed access to the restricted section. What are you doing in this part of the library?
What I'm doing in this part of the library is looking at all of the ridiculous cards that have just been spiking in prices over the last week and a half to 2 weeks. And I keep scratching my head at some of these, wondering how in the heck people are honestly paying this amount of money for these cards that I used to open back in when we were opening dark packs going, ugh, this card again, that card's not worth anything. And you just kind of toss it onto the floor and some little kid would go, you know, scuttling by to pick it up. The card I'm talking about, gentlemen, is Mana Vortex. 2 blue and 1 generic enchantment. Each player who controls land sacrifices 1 land during his or her upkeep. If at any time there are no lands in play, Mana Vortex is destroyed. If you do not sacrifice a land when Mana Vortex is cast, Mana Vortex is countered. I purposefully did not read the Oracle text on this just because I find the original so absolutely ridiculous and so absolutely just confusing. Basically, you have to sack a land when you cast Mana Vortex or it gets countered, and you're sacking a land during each upkeep, and if there's no lands in play, it hits the graveyard as well. I know that this was played in certain EDH decks to kind of keep people off mana, to kind of stymie that acceleration, especially for people who are using non-land sources to generate mana. But guys, do you see any hope for this? Is this just a product of buyout because it's an old card from the dark on the reserve list? Or do you see that this has some kind of brewing capacity? Sean, you're another old man just like me. Where's Mana Vortex slot in?
I've always wondered why this hasn't gotten a fair shake in the blue-white landstill decks that used to pop up in Legacy. You can operate on a very thin mana base. Now, do you want to play it a little bit more as a Winter Orb style deck? I think that's the way they were set up. But if you know that you're going in and you have a Mana Vortex or two in your deck, and maybe you play this with Enlightened Tutor to go get it when the time is appropriate. So many decks are running so lean on lands in Legacy because it's largely a 1-2 drop format. Yes, you have the 4-color Leobold decks that want to get to 3 and a couple of Jet decks that play Jace and want to get to 4. But if you can stop their development beyond 3, they might be able to play their spells, but you compress the ability for them to play multiple spells each turn while holding up counter magic. Suddenly things like Daze playing it in the free mode become a real drawback. So I still think Mana Vortex has an opportunity if somebody sort of rebuilds the blue-white landstill deck and takes another look at how to attack this format.
Hurley, what about you? We've been going with the theme of Fun Police, and this card just has sirens going off as it's played. Do you see this as anything in Legacy or any other kind of format?
Twice in my life, I have bought 4 of these cards. Not for investment, but to use in Legacy decks. And that Legacy deck was Stasis. Kind of in the same boat there, Sean. I was trying it in a Stasis deck to see if I could make it work. I also tried it in a blue-white version of the Scorbrack Land Tax deck. I actually think it's got something somewhere. I just don't know where that is. This is one of those cards I think that Deathrite is stimming the, you know, and price buyout at this point are just killing the life in Legacy. And I think that if the reserve list did not exist and Legacy was the format that people were playing instead of Modern, I do think that there would eventually be a deck that popped up that was playing this Mana Vortex. And I do think it'd be some type of like blue-white control, blue-white land tax, or like a land still stasis, something like that.
Gentlemen, I can't believe neither of you have mentioned a card that I think would slot in so well with Mana Vortex. Another 3 casting cost, Crucible of Worlds. I feel like if you can get Mana Vortex down and then you can just keep cycling your lands, even Wasteland, to do double duty, I feel like that is where this deck might shine. But I like your idea, Hurley, of like a Stasis deck, like a Landstill deck. That seems to be where this would slot in the best. If you can just kind of lock your opponent out, as Sean said, at like 2 mana, at 3 mana, and then all they are doing is just basically sitting there trying to cast maybe 1 spell a turn at the most, I think that's a game that you can definitely win every time. So I really do think Mana Vortex in the right Legacy deck might have some legs.
Mana Vortex, this week's 3 minutes to brew. I just got chills thinking about lands splashing blue off their Mox Diamonds and playing Mana Vortex with Life from the Loam. Okay, let's hope that dystopian reality does not come to pass. What'd you do to get better at Magic this week? Matt, you're going to be playing at SCG Louisville this weekend.
Oh, I'm going to be playing a lot of side events. I haven't decided what format I'm going to play. Got a couple friends coming down, actually from your area, Sean. And so we're going to, I think, just decide there. My normal two-headed giant partner is going to be going with me. So we're going to be playing in some two-headed giant. So I'm really looking forward to playing some Magic, and just that's all there is on the agenda is just play Magic, play Magic, play Magic.
Yeah, I know what you're feeling like. I'm excited to brew something up for FNM this week. My small LGS has a rotating format each Friday night, and this week is Modern, and I'm taking on the challenge of rebuilding the Heartless Summoning deck in Modern. So, Matt, I've got a sketch all outlined. I'm going to play it this week, and I'll report back to you on Monday, and we can compare notes of failure and figure out what not to do with it heading forward after that. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
Not a whole heck of a lot, to be honest with you, gentlemen. Didn't really have any time to do anything other than catch coverage, little bits here and there. But the one thing I will say, I was so happy to see an older gentleman, let's call him, win the Legacy tournament. It just kind of gave me a little bit of hope. And I know that I'm never going to be a Pro Tour champion. I know that I'm probably never going to win a Grand Prix. But for that moment, I was sitting right there with Gary in that hall with among those hundreds, it seemed like, of screaming Scotsmen wanting to be part of that, because that was just an amazing, amazing thing. I think Gary Campbell embodies what an ambassador to the game is. When you read about what he's done for Magic overall, not to mention Magic in his home country of Scotland, I think it's pretty powerful. To see all the other players recognize that was quite touching.
Oh, you brave soul. May you be an ambassador to your community wherever you go. And whenever you get the opportunity, we'll see you back here next week on Try Hards.